box? Who's in the box? What's in the box?
I'm not gonna hurt you. I'm just gonna bash your brains in.
No. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Tears, please. It's a waste of good suffering.
You're staying. This isn't a democracy anymore.
This is now the United States of
EMZT Radio.
They mostly come at night. Mostly.
And today we have Miss Jackie Dallas, actress extraordinaire, and we know her from one of our favorite series. Welcome, Miss Jackie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for having time for us. This is just great. Okay, I know we're just going to talk about it a little bit, mm-hmm. but we know you mostly from Stranger Things. You did have a small part, but you did give all the geeks some hope that they can have a hot girlfriend too.
So
how did you get the part on Stranger Things?
So I got that role through an audition that my agent had sent me. It filmed in Atlanta. I'm based out of California, but I do have a Southeast agent, and you know, it's funny. It was a small unknown show at the time. I got the role based off of a video audition, which was really amazing.
Wow.
To me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what seems people are doing nowadays. You don't have to be there, but you can send a video or Skype it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. Technology is really, really changing things. And, you know, I think it's great. It's very convenient. And also, you have a much broader, like, pool of talent that you can choose from. You know, you're not restricted to a certain location or a certain area anymore. As far as YouTube goes, I think YouTube is a different platform, but as far as like having video auditions sent in, I think it is definitely becoming a lot more mainstream. It's becoming a lot more common. It depends on the location of where you are too, though. Los Angeles tends to be still very much in-person audition based. And why wouldn't they be? You know, obviously there's advantages to having an audition in person. You get to meet them. You get to get a sense of their personality and the chemistry. You can give them directions right on the spot. And in Los Angeles, you have such a huge pool of actors that you can do that. I feel like in a lot of the smaller markets, they are gearing more towards video auditions because, you know, out of convenience, actors have a very unpredictable schedule for one. And then somewhere like Atlanta, where the entire region consists of, you know, Florida, the Carolinas, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, all of that, it's not always realistic to expect a person to drive 6, 7, 8, 9 hours for an audition. So a lot of times the first round is video, which is really cool.
Oh yeah, and living in South Carolina, I know that to be a true fact that, you know, it is. It's I think 6 hours from here where I live to Atlanta. So yeah, you make a definite point there. It's like I want to say 10 to Orlando. I know they do a lot in Orlando.
So. Uh huh.
Okay. Okay. I am looking at your IMDb list, and it looks like you haven't been working for long, but are you able to pick and choose the parts you want, or are you just trying to take any job offer you can?
There definitely is somewhat of a selection process. You know, when you start out, you are just eager to do anything that you possibly can. So you'll take on, you know, small roles, background roles, student film jobs, music videos. So you kind of, you know, you start there. And then once you've been working for a little while, you become a little bit more selective just because, one, you know, you kind of get a vibe of knowing what to expect from a certain set or a production.
Okay.
And then, you know, standards vary and so forth. But I personally, I love working as much as I can, right? I'm in it for the craft. So here in the Bay, I'm pretty fortunate that we have a really, really rich indie film scene. There's a lot of short films and web series and feature films going on at any given point in time. So when I get offers or when I hear of auditions for them, you know, I do a little bit of research and check out who's the production company, what have they done before. And if the story is interesting to me, then yeah, I'll go for it.
Wow. I mean, isn't that amazing how you can check people out like before you take a job? I mean,
yeah,
the technology, all the information is just so available. I mean, I think that's even better now than before, because before you had to go by word of mouth that these people are okay or they're not okay.
Right.
Yeah. Do you have like a favorite type of genre that you like to do?
I don't know if I do. I kind of like all of it. I like having the variety, you know?
Yeah.
I think that really delving into dramatic roles, whether they be, you know, sad roles or angry roles or, you know, just heavy, I think there's a lot of personal reward in that. But at the same time, doing something that's lighthearted and funny is a lot of fun. So I kind of feel like, you know, getting a little bit of it all, that's the ideal balance.
But you have a film that you're going to be producing here soon, or at least being an associate producer on. Is there anything you can tell us about that? Or
yeah, so it's a psychological thriller. It's called Look Into the Fire. That's the title we have right now. It might change, but I kind of like it. It's a psychological thriller, and basically it's about a group of neuropsychology grad students. They do this experiment. They're looking to learn about the brain and like what it can do. And the experiment goes wrong, of course. Yeah. Bad things happen. And the extent of what I can say is that one of the students, he ends up having these visions and these horrific dreams, and he's not sure where they're coming from at first. And it turns out that they are some sort of repressed memory. So then he has to find out, like, what is it that he's forgotten? And why are these dreams so vivid and horrid? And the more he tries to learn about it, the more he realizes that there are people who don't want him to know the truth. Mm-hmm. So he's got to kind of figure out what happened, what's going on, who can he trust, who can he not trust, who's the bad guy. So it's kind of a blend of, I'd say, Shutter Island, Memento, and Misery, those three movies.
Wow.
Yeah, so those are the themes and the tones that we're going for. It's pretty dark.
Wow. Yes. What kind of background training have you had for acting?
You know, to be honest with you, I've learned mostly in the field. When I was younger, I did a lot of, you know, like community theater kind of stuff. I grew up in a small town in Florida, so we didn't have this like Hollywood sort of opportunities. So I did a lot of, you know, school theater, community theater, children's theater, summer camps, so, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, like 3 years ago, as an adult now, I kind of decided like, oh, you know, I don't want to do my job anymore. I want to be spontaneous and whimsical and kind of dumb and quit my stable job and become an artist, which I did. And then from that point onwards, yeah, I just kind of threw myself into it, learned on the field, talked to really good people, you know, ask a lot of questions, take a couple of workshops, take a couple of classes here and there. Yeah, I wish I could say that I went to film school or something, but no, I didn't.
Oh no, this is good that to hear that someone who hasn't had any schooling, like you know, gone to film school or some sort of dramatic arts, that you learned while working and got lots of jobs. It looks like you're constantly busy.
Yeah, trying to stay busy, definitely. A lot of it has to do with, you know, just, there's a lot of luck in the industry too. You know, I can't really take all the credit for anything. Right place, right time, just meeting the right people, knowing the right people, having good impressions. I feel very, very fortunate to be as busy as I am.
Do you have like a goal of where you would like to do with your career?
My you know, I love television. I really, really love television. Movies are great too. I love movies, but I think if I had to pick my dream job, it would be to be a, you know, a series regular on some sort of like television show, a good, successful, long-running television show.
Supernatural.
Oh my God, you just said it.
You just said it.
So every year I like get so...
Yeah, and the latest thing they're doing now is they're bringing back characters who died like in earlier seasons to give them more screen time. So, I mean, plus the best thing on Supernatural is you dying. That's like the best part is to die. I mean, because they give you the most horrific ways to die, and it's all bloody. Right.
It is, or, it is. Or and if you're lucky, you come back and you get to die again.
yeah, see? So I'd say go for that one.
Man, tell me about it. I'm trying to get out there.
13 seasons. Wow. Just unreal. Unreal. Mm-hmm. Matt, got anything?
Yeah. So did anything, like when you were a kid, did anything get you interested in acting? Like, do you have a favorite film that you just saw one day and said, you know what, this is kind of what I want to do for the rest of my life?
I think, God, this is such a throwaway answer to that question. I'd say everything, honestly. I was a kid, I had like such a vivid imagination. I had so many imaginary friends. Like, I was that oddball child, always singing and like talking to myself in the corner. I was a big Disney, I grew up on Disney, like all the Disney movies. And I just remember, you know, one, I mean, it's kid friendly, so that's all I was able to watch. But I would pretend to be like all the characters, and that's kind of how I spent most of my like childhood at home. So I think wanting to be an actor, or at least like take on roles and characters, I think that was always something I was fascinated in. Yeah. And when then I found out, you know, like real people, not just cartoons, but like actual people in movies, I was like, what? I could be one of those.
I was going to say, do you think you're popular enough to do any convention circuits?
I have been doing a few convention things here and there on a very kind of a low scale. I would not say that I'm popular enough for that yet. I'm not going to get ahead of myself. I would end up being the person at the table and like no one comes to me, so I don't want to put myself in that position. Like, who is she again? But I have been going out to conventions and being part of panels, and like one of the things that I do quite often is I'm part of a very close-knit filmmaking crew here in the Bay, and we make movies and we go to conventions and we talk about them. You know, we pitch our movies, we promote them, we show our trailers, and then we also talk about what it's like to be on the filmmaking side of things. So the process of it, right? Like how to be an indie filmmaker or how to just even get started. Mm-hmm. So I really like being a part of those panels because one, I mean, I get to talk about what I do and what I love and share that knowledge and encourage other creatives out there to like, you know, it's not too late. You know, it's not too hard. It is hard, but it's not too hard. And if this is your dream and this is what you want to do and you have questions, ask your questions, go out and do it, you know, make your movies. And that's something that's really, really just inspiring to me, seeing all the people out there who have all these great ideas and all these skills and getting, you know, giving them the opportunity to say, hey, this is how you get started and this is what you do. Everyone kind of needs that encouragement. Yes. And I feel that I had a really, really like nurturing community when I was getting into filming and when I was learning about the process. So I want to continue that, you know, give back.
Yeah. Plus the best part about conventions is you can network.
Yes. You get to meet some really cool people.
Yeah. Yeah. You meet some more people and they know people or they have a company and they need help. Uh-huh. And that's the best thing I like about conventions is all the people you get to meet. And mm-hmm. opportunities that show up. So, yeah. Really? Wow. Your turn, Matt.
So, thank you. Thank you, Vane. Thank you for the permission.
What if he wasn't ready? She just put you on the spot there.
I know, right? But with all the available platforms now, you know, with Vimeo and you know, we talked about YouTube a little earlier. Is there any chance, you know, you might be interested in making your own television series or anything of that nature?
As far as making my own, so this film that we're doing, this is my first venture into producing. I'm really enjoying the process, but it's definitely a lot of work. And I'm recognizing that I'm definitely favoring being on the front of the camera side as opposed to behind the camera side. Yeah. So whether I choose to, you know, make more things in the future, I mean, who knows? We'll see. I'm not going to say the answer is no. The answer is probably yes, but, you know, it's one step at a time, one project at a time. I am doing a lot of kind of like collaborative passion projects in regards to like web series, which is close to, you know, a TV series, right? You have multiple episodes broken into like different arcs. And, you know, these ultimately will probably end up on YouTube or Vimeo or, you know, another online streaming sort of platform. And I'm excited to be a part of those because that kind of fulfills this wanting to be on television element of it. But I'm not quite ready to tackle my own TV series. You know what I mean? Like trying to get it all greenlit and trying to get like a whole storyline together. And that's a lot of work. that's quite a bit.
It is. That consumes your life even more than just being an actress.
Right. Yeah. Of course. Of course. Yes, and there are plenty of people who already do that and are fabulous at their jobs. So I just, you know, I trust to leave the professionals to, you know.
Go.
I just want to know, what about writing? You think about maybe writing series in the future, or just right now you just want to be in front of the camera?
You know, I feel like you ask a creative and everyone's going to say, oh, I've got this great idea for a movie, or I've got this great idea for a script. I do have a couple of ideas kind of, you know, bobbling around my head, but I've tried writing before, and let me tell you, that is a skill.
Yes.
That is hard.
I got two friends shopping things right now. Trust me, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it is so hard. I mean, props to you writers out there, because I sit down and I'll sit in front of an empty Word document at my computer for like hours, and then I go back and reread it the next day, and I'm like, wow, this is horrible. I'm just not good at this. Yeah.
Don't worry. I do that a lot too. it's very common, and so you enjoy being in front of the camera and
yeah. I mean, I enjoy like certain let's see, like logistical things or objective things, but as far as trying to create something, writing is a skill, and it's very hard. There's so many things to consider, you know, like the Absolutely. It's not just about story and character development. I mean, there's pacing, there's, you know, trying to figure out like, you know, the different plot locations and the twists and how to introduce, you know, plot lines and the story and like doses that's manageable and letting the audience know just what they need to know at one time. It's like in my head, I have a story and it's like, I just want to put it all out on paper at once. You know, there's like no rhyme or reason to it. So I'll leave that to the writers.
All right, back to you, Vane.
Now I lost my thought.
Oh, wonderful.
I got it. I found it.
Okay.
Is there any upcoming projects you can talk about?
Yeah. So, you know, I talked briefly about my film that I'm producing, which we're going to start filming that in August. Hopefully by the time everything is said and done, it'll be out sometime in 2018. And I've written a little, you know, not written, I've got a little character in that film as well. So I'll be kind of working both sides of the camera.
Ooh.
Yeah. I've got this web series that I'm doing as soon as this film is over with. It's called Represent, and it's a web series. It's going to have, I think, 13 or 14 episodes. I play one of the main characters named Tess, and it's about, surprise, surprise, two female actresses trying to make it in Hollywood. And it's kind of a, it's a comedy. It's definitely a comedy about the things that women have to face and then the things that we have to face as minorities or as your not so picture perfect conventional Hollywood actress. A little tongue in cheek, a little bit of true stories here and there, and
wow,
you know. So yeah, I've got that coming up, and then I'm part of a horror series since you guys are, you know, a horror podcast.
Yeah,
it's going to be, I think I want to say it's 8 episodes of the first episode we filmed already is called Hush, Little Baby, and we are in process of filming the second of the series called The Raven's Cry. We just filmed this past weekend, actually. I've got a couple of photos up on my Instagram and stuff about the cast and props that we've used. It's pretty cool. It's kind of got a witchy vibe to it without giving too much away.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's a fun little project. I do a lot of crying and screaming in that, so... But yeah, that's being produced by
Matt.
What? Huh? I'm here. What? Okay. What was that all about? Who are you skilling? Oh, you lost it again. Oh, okay. yeah, that threw me way off. So. Ah, jeez. I just really screwed that up. I screwed the pooch on that one. Sorry. Oh, it's going to be a lot of editing tonight. Not going to do that soon. Because I've already asked all my questions. Like, the ones I had thought of. Is there any fundraising going on for any of your projects right now?
Yes. So we are doing a massive fundraising for Look Into the Fire. Uh-huh. Since we're in pre-production, we're starting to film in about 2 weeks. So we are looking to raise, you know, as much as we can pre-production so that we can put money towards, you know, just securing our locations, paying our cast and crew and our actors, you know, hardworking people. You can only work on so many free projects before you're like, no, I take myself seriously. You have to pay me.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right.
Food is a cost, you know, we keep our cast and crew fed and happy. But yeah, like locations and props and set dressings and, you know, things of that nature. So insurance, you know, all these things that just require money up front. So we are doing an Indiegogo campaign right now for Look Into the Fire. On Indiegogo, it's just Look Into the Fire movie and you can find it there. It is in pre-production right now, so we don't have a trailer or anything cut yet. We are hoping to do a second round of fundraising after we do get that to try and, you know, finish up post-production editing costs and so forth. We've been fortunate to have a few investors come on board. And so we've raised about $15,000 so far that way, which is a great start wow. for an indie film. Yeah. We're still looking, so if there's any investors out there who would like to be a part of the arts, you can get in contact with me. Love to tell you more about the project. But yeah, so we're moving along, you know?
Absolutely. Bane, you got anything else?
No, that covers everything I got.
Well then, I guess just tell people where they can find you on the internet. And we'll obviously have the link to the Indiegogo page in the show notes. So where can people find you?
So you can find me on several of the social media platforms. On Twitter, I'm at Jax Dallas, JAXDALLAS, like Texas. my Instagram handle is exactly the same, at Jax Dallas. And on Facebook, I go by Jackie Dallas. I've got a profile and then my Facebook actor page is Jackie Dallas Actress.
And thank you very much for joining us today. This has been so great.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. This is fun.
Just a little taste of what you get to do.
All right, so we're back. We're talking with Sal Kanka. He is with Seymour, the unfortunate vampire. Good afternoon or good evening, sir.
Hey, Matt, how are you? Good to chat with you.
Hey, we're here, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So Sal, tell us about your project, what you got going on here, because this sounds kind of fun.
Yeah, it's a Seymour the Unfortunate Vampire is an 8-part web series. It's a vampire comedy that's about a newly turned vampire struggling to put the pieces of his life back together. And through these 8 episodes, you know, he's got his two dear friends, Wally and Karina, who are there trying to help him the best that they can. And, you know, there's trouble at every turn with vampire hunters and werewolves and other supernatural creatures that will be part of this series. And we hope this is just the beginning of Seymour the Unfortunate Vampire. We hope to see more installments. We hope to see possibly a feature film. We're feeling very ambitious about this project.
Well, I mean, that's always good. And can you tell us a little bit about some of the cast, you know, you've already got confirmed?
Yeah, of course. So as you know, and I don't know how much your audience may know, but, you know, I'm from Hecla Kane Creations, the creators of the Imperfect Podcast. And over the last year, you know, we've been helping other indie filmmakers tell their stories. We've been supporting the indie film community, you know, and met just a ton of great people, some really talented folks. You know, we put out weekly interviews every Monday. And through that, we met some folks like Marshall Teague, who's got over 100 acting credits to his name. He's been in everything from Roadhouse to Armageddon, The Rock. He's died more times on camera than most people have the privilege to step in front of one. So,
nice.
That's the running joke with Marshall, but he is just a super guy. The second you talk to him, you realize how genuine and charismatic he is, which I'm sure has helped him through his career. He's also a Navy veteran, and he's going to be playing the part of Chester the Werewolf, who acts as a mentor of sorts for Seymour. He's introduced to Seymour through the SRS, which is the Supernatural Rehabilitation Services. So we got a really interesting storyline there for Marshall and his role. We have actress and stuntwoman Tanya Kay. She's known as the most dangerous woman in Hollywood. She knows how to do fire, and she's been a stuntwoman for Pink in one of her music videos. She's in the upcoming Puppet Master, Axis Termination. She's also been, you know, in dramas like on the Lifetime channel. So she's got just a really cool, diverse background, and we're really excited to work with her. She's going to play a kick-ass vampire hunter named Peggy. So she'll be a stake-wielding kick-ass woman in this series.
Awesome. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and then, you know, the other talent we have is Ethan Martin. I don't know if you had him on your show at all, but Ethan was the producer and actor in Eyes of the Roshi, featuring Eric Roberts. I know Ethan was on a lot of the Potter Family shows. That's how we met him, obviously. And, you know, the production, we just were hanging with him at the Soho International Film Festival, where his film was selected and had a screening there. So Ethan's been a really great friend to us, and we're super excited to have him involved with the project as well. He's playing another, the second vampire hunter alongside Tanya Kay. So the two of them will be teaming up on screen.
Oh, nice. Now, is there anything, you know, that you can tell us extra about this without, you know, spoiling it, or?
Oh, geez. Well, I mean, I can tell you there's, the big thing is, I mean, we're crowdfunding for this. So, you know, the crowdfunding campaign launches on Monday, July 17th, and will be running for 30 days. You know, we're trying to raise $10,000 to help support the project, which is a very meager budget. You know, the film crew and the production, who is basically us, you know, we're not looking to make any money. We're looking to, you know, support the talent as best we can and market and go to festival and potentially the American film market. You know, as far as the plot line goes, I can tell you that in the 8 episodes, there's a lot of comedy. You know, we've made this, but it's not slapstick Naked Gun type comedy. You know, but there's a lot of funny elements to this that we've built into the story, and there are definitely some surprise characters, which I know Joe doesn't really want me to talk too much about on air about these things. There is a fairy that is critical to the storyline of the store of the series, and that's really all I can say about that.
I like the sounds of this already. I'll be honest with you. So you said, yeah, that was actually going to lead into the next thing, was the crowdfunding.
Sure.
So to $10,000, that's all you're really asking for. It's really not as much as a lot of people have been asking for lately. So what all, like, expenses have you already got covered, I guess, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're privately, you know, getting private investors as well for some of the costs. You know, I mean, we already, as a production company, we already have our own gear. You know, we have the cameras, we have the lighting, you know, we're a full production crew. We do a lot of music videos and commercials and those things already.
Okay.
So we're very fortunate that, like, most of the money, honestly, it's going to the talent. It's getting them, you know, flying Tanya and Marshall in, putting them up at a hotel so they don't have to sleep in somebody's basement for a few days. You know, supporting other local businesses is a big thing for us. You know, we're using, you know, other local musicians as well. There's a punk rock band called Bad Mary. They're going to be featured in the film as well, and we're actually looking for other indie music to submit. So I'm going to be running a separate campaign for that. I don't know if I want to call it a campaign, but I'm looking to take submissions for music if they want to be involved with the series. So any indie musicians out there or bands, feel free to submit away.
Absolutely. So you came to the right podcast for that one.
that's
for sure.
Exactly.
So talk to us about Heckler Kane here, about your production company. And you said you do music videos already. What are you guys looking to maybe get into in the future? And do you have any other projects roaming around?
Sure. So, yeah, as a production company, you know, we've shot a few short films. Last year, we were at the Long Island International Film Festival with our psychological horror called Twisted, which is a fun one. I don't really know how to explain it. Psychological horror is enough, and you know, it's an interesting little storyline. Definitely gritty. The most fun with that was last year when we screened it at the film festival. There were a bunch of nice, sweet older women, you know, there to watch, you know, a number of films, and they saw us, and we were like, oh yes, our film is in the, you know, it's coming up, it's in this block of movies, and they were like, oh, we can't wait to see it, and we had this great chat with them, and I know. We knew our film did the right thing because they were so they were so stunned by, I guess, what they saw on screen. They couldn't even look at us after. They were like, oh, yeah, good to see you. Bye. And they just kind of they were very sweet, though. But yeah, so we've done some short films. We've done a silent film. We've done some music videos for local bands. You know, I'm a hard rock and punk guy, so I lean towards that way. We did do a country music video this year as well for a friend, and I think that actually turned out quite well. So even though I'm not admittedly not a country music fan. And you know, in terms of what we're doing with Seymour, like I said, we've actually – Seymour is just one of the characters in this universe that we've created, essentially. There are storylines for a number of different characters that we see that we'd like to be able to bring to the camera, bring to the screen in the future. You know, so this – 8-part web series is really something that's going to be used, I think, as a calling card for Heckler Kane going forward. So we're trying to put out the best production that we can on, you know, the most amount of budget that we can get and scrum together. So, you know, that along with, you know, we have some other things in the works, including a reality show that we shot a concept video for with a it's a female farmer who runs a nonprofit community farm up in Simsbury, Connecticut. And, you know, I'm talking to them about moving forward with that as well. So, you know, we have other types of productions that we hope to do as well. And I think we're diverse enough where, you know, whether it's a reality show, doing commercial work, because my background is in marketing and business. I'm an entrepreneur as well. So doing these types of projects, it's really about preparing, organizing, and, you know, just knowing who your audience is and then pushing forward with the goals. So.
Oh, awesome. I like where you're going with this. I like you guys, how diverse you really are. So, talk about your podcast a little bit, because, you know, we both are members of the Podern family. So, tell us, you know, what we can expect. Maybe some people who listen to EMCT haven't checked out your podcast yet. Tell everybody about it.
Sure, of course. It was started a little bit over a year ago. I wasn't even involved with Heckler Kane Creations at the time. Joe and I are friends through our band. We have a band, a Green Day tribute band called Basket Case here in New York, and we've been doing that for over 12 years, I think. 2005, yeah, 12 years. We met on Craigslist, so no judgments, but I literally put out an ad looking for people to audition, and Joe came in to play bass, and you know, we've been getting along ever since. And so the podcast, they had Heckler Kane Creations. It was Joe Kane and Wayne Heckler who started the company, and they were, like I said, they were doing some short films and music videos and other things. They wanted to start the podcast. I know a bit about the podcasting world because I used to manage the Audible.com podcast affiliate program back in the day. So, you know, as a marketing consultant, I've been kind of, you know, worked my way through a lot of companies.
you could have been our rep. I mean,
it was a long time ago. I mean, it was like when it first started. Very possible. God, I met so many. Yeah. So I knew a lot of podcasts. I knew a lot about podcasting in general. And when Joe came to me and said he wanted to start it, you know, they were kind of hanging out and doing things. But I said, if you guys really want to push the indie film thing, I said, and we're stuck here on Long Island, so to speak, you know, right next to the largest city in the world, New York City, of course, but stuck out on Long Island. I said, we got to make some relationships. I said, let's start doing interviews. And, you know, we pushed that agenda forward. And like I said, we've met some really great people doing it. You know, if people want to know about our podcast, it's really about learning about the film industry. We've met great filmmakers like Tony Germanario, who just finished the movie Bad Frank that was released with Tom Sizemore and Kevin Interdonato. It's winning all kinds of awards. He shot that feature film in 11 days for $80,000. You know, I mean, learning from people like that and understanding the process that they've gone through, you know, is paramount to us. You know, we didn't go to film school. Let's put it that way, right? Yeah. None of us are classically trained filmmakers or in that sense. So we're learning the grassroots way. We go out, we take the cameras, and we go shoot stuff. And we go, let's see, does it look good? Does it look shitty? You know, we go out and write stuff. I think a lot of people say they're filmmakers or say they're screenwriters, and then they have the script that sits on the desk for 11 years and they don't do anything with it. So for better or worse, whether you think Seymour is going to be great or not, maybe it's hokey, maybe it's not, maybe it's the best thing you'll ever see, but we're going to go out and shoot it. And that's our objective. Go out and get shit done.
Oh yeah. And, on that note, have you got any locations already scouted, or are you just in the process of scouting your locations now?
Yeah, so, you know, we're about 30 days away from shooting. And, you know, we have about half the locations locked down. You know, it's true indie film style. It's beg, borrow, steal. And, you know, my generous aunt and godmother is going to let her use her house for the big there's a big dinner scene with Seymour's mother and the family for a nice Friday night dinner. And my aunt's gonna let us use her house. She's got a nice dining room set up. And we got some other locations, a local bar called KJ Farrell's, who I actually do the marketing for. They're letting us use the facility to shoot a big club scene where there's going to be like 100 extras, and you know, people are going to get made up as other supernatural creatures. That's going to be one of the perks, actually. So
oh,
if
nice.
You contribute, yeah, as a contributor, and if you're local on Long Island, you can come out. If you want to be an extra in the film, we're working stuff out with, you know, some drink specials, free drinks, get made up, get some screen time, maybe meet some of the cast and all that type of stuff. So if you want to get made up as a vampire, a werewolf, a fairy, something, like that and do a little playtime, you know, Monday, August 14th, we'll be at KJ Farrell. So, you know, we do. We have a medical facility that we need for an episode. We have a couple of cool cars that we're going to get on loan. So yeah, we're very diverse. We're not like shooting this in somebody's apartment. We're really stretching the budget. Let's put it that way.
So it's just going to be, are you just shooting in Nassau County or just going around?
Yeah, Nassau and Suffolk. We're not leaving Long Island. We're not getting that adventurous. We do not have money to take airfare or, you know, all that type of stuff anywhere crazy. So we are going to shoot on Long Island. We're happy to. We think Long Island's a great community. We do have Gold Coast Productions here, where, like, you know, Kevin James shoots, and the old Grumman facility, which is now a film studio. So, you know, we're right next to some really great talent. You know, maybe they'll take notice of us one day.
Maybe, you never know. So let's talk about you for a minute now.
Sure.
Have you been a horror fan your entire life, or just something you've gotten into? Or
yeah, I've been a horror fan all my life, actually. I've been a movie fan all my life, and I don't know that I really realized it, you know, because I started talking to other people. I just meet, I guess in what I do, I just meet a ton of people all the time. And I went through I was single for a while. I live with my girlfriend now, but I would meet a lot of people through the online dating scene and even things like that. You start to talk to people about music and movies, and I realized like how many people don't know about certain movies or things. So, and I was like, wow, I guess I do know a lot about this stuff, you know. I'm in no way a movie buff. I don't know a lot of stats and statistics and things like that. But growing up, yeah, I used to watch horror movies with my mom, oddly enough.
So did I. Don't worry.
There you go. We got something in common now. I don't know why. My dad couldn't get into it. And my mom, she liked the scary stuff. And we'd be up late. You know, my dad kind of fall asleep. And my mom, we'd be up late on the couch. And I'd be watching Nightmare on Elm Street or what a Poltergeist or whatever it was. You know, but I was also into all the Mel Brooks stuff, you know, Spaceballs, oh, yes. And Men in Tights and Princess Bride, all those movies, all of them.
I still love every single one of them. He's absolutely insanely funny and can still write some great stuff.
I know.
Absolutely amazing. So I guess we have to ask the obligatory question since we're on a horror podcast. What's your favorite horror movie?
Ah, shit. I don't know. I hate favorite questions because I'm like, I like too many things, you know?
Yeah.
You know, but I think back though, you know, I was a little young for like Mike Myers and like Halloween. I didn't see those as a kid, so they didn't resonate with me enough. But like, you know, I did go see like Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, stuff like that. I mean, honestly, as a kid, things that even stuck with me were like Gremlins. You know, I saw Gremlins when it first came out. That stuck. I don't know if you want to call it a horror movie, but you know,
that's the first mention of Gremlins on this podcast.
Is it?
Yeah, that's the first time anybody's ever admitted they like Gremlins, which is amazing to me. It's a great movie.
It's hysterical. I mean, even honestly, as shitty as Gremlins 2 was, even that was good.
Exactly. I mean, you watch it just to get a good laugh.
Exactly. And then, I mean, I just remember all that stuff. And Zach Galligan, we've been trying to get Zach on the podcast because he's doing Preacher 6 with Kyle Hester, who we had on the show. So I think you guys had Kyle as well.
Yep, we just had Kyle a couple of weeks ago, as a matter of fact. You guys can download that if you want to listen to it again, but
yeah
I'm actually excited for that project too, but you know, since you know, well, we're here to talk your project, and I guess the only thing left to do is just tell people, you know, where they can go, and because it'll be, you know, obviously we're recording this on Sunday for those of you who don't know, so obviously it'll be out by the time we get started here, so just tell everybody where to go and what to see or what to do.
Sure. By the time you guys hear this, you can go to hecklerkane.com/seymour, and you will find all the information there. You can sign up for the email list. You'll get backstage access. You know, we have a big video push with Seymour as well. Like, so if you want the inside scoop, definitely go to HeklaCane.com/Seymour. We are crowdfunding with Seed and Spark, and Seed and Spark is an awesome indie film crowdfunding platform. You know, if you're into indie film and looking to support other talent as well, you know, which is our main goal, is to support other indie film talent as well as the actors that do this stuff. You know, we're so blessed and thankful to have, you know, guys like Marshall and people like Tanya to come out and do our web series. So yeah, go, we'll be crowdfunding on Seed and Spark, but like I said, go to, you can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're all over the place. And you can follow me at Sal Conca on Twitter. And I'm happy to talk to anyone. So love all the support that we get.
Absolutely. And Sal, we appreciate you coming on. And we want you back on whenever it gets a little bit closer to release here. So anybody else you want to bring on, bring them on. I mean, you guys got an open door. You know, we have an open door policy here on this podcast. So anytime you need something, just let us know. We'll be more than happy to let you do anything you need.
Awesome, Matt. Likewise, I'd love to have you come co-host an episode with us on the Imperfect Podcast, and we can figure that out as well. So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. All right, Sal, we appreciate it.
All right, Matt. Have a great day.
All right, thanks.
You love midnight movies, don't you? But can you handle midnight movies 24 hours a day?
Your death will be indescribable.
Find out on Black Flag TV. The first viral television on the web, Black Flag TV is entirely dedicated to haunting horror, science fiction, and cult movies. Broadcasting live 24 hours a day, obscure independent movies and classic horror. Make Black Flag TV your sanctuary for the horror genre.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Visit us now, blackflag.tv.
And we're back, and we have in the hot seat today, Jeff Harmer from the Indiegogo campaign Dead Air, which is puppet-infused, female-led horror comedy. This is an amazing project. Jeff, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And
let's talk about this project. This is like an amazing project. These puppets look a lot like something from Dark Crystal-ish Labyrinth, the goblin looking. So where did you come up with the idea for this film?
Well, the story itself originated from it's kind of a long story, but I was in the middle of shooting something else, and a guy who I was working with, he works on an airfield, and said, you know, would I want to make a film in this amazing biplane he had around the corner? It's like a Russian AN-2 biplane. It can seat about 20 people in it.
Right.
And he said to me, you know, you can have it. We'll take you up and down. Whatever you need is yours, on one condition, that the film contains zombies. And so I sort of had a chat with my colleague, Peter Hearn, who we've been toying with the idea of him writing something for me. And I sort of said, look, here you go. Here's an idea. It's got to have a plane. It's got to have zombies in it. And I gave him my idea for the story, which he threw away, and he basically, you know, in a very drawn out process for us, because it's, you know, he came up with Dead Air. It started off with sort of quite big and elaborate, and we've had to sort of tone it down and get it sort of sleek and as tight as possible. And we've now set it on a Boeing rather than the biplane, because his script was just too big. You know, I took him to the plane. And I said, look, there's no way we can shoot your script on that plane. It's
right.
Too small. So right. Luckily, we had some lovely people at a studio nearby to us called Black Hanger Studios. They have a huge Boeing sort of plane on their forecourt, and it's just sitting there. And they said to me, you know what, you know, we'll do you a deal, we'll get you on that plane if you like. And then I got Pete down there to have a look, and he rewrote the script to, you know, benefit us with this new huge plane. And so that's kind of where the story came from. But the idea of the creatures, Pete had an idea that it was more about the catalyst for creating this. Initially was a zombie on a plane film. And he said, you know, we've had, you know, diseases and things like that. So we thought it'd be really cool to have someone being scratched, you know, by a creature in a box. And we were thinking of, I don't know if you've seen Peter Jackson's Brain Dead, which is one of my sort of favorite zombie films. So we kind of lifted the idea of someone being scratched by something else that creates a zombie horde sort of thing from that. Initially, you were only ever going to see sort of glowing eyes in a box, you know, very much like Boglins, if you ever remember them. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of what we envisaged, just seeing these little eyes, sort of green eyes in boxes in the background, and then someone getting scratched. And then, you know, we just sort of got a bit more adventurous, really. And, you know, before we knew it, we were getting a bunch of people at Wimbledon College of Arts to build us a load of puppets. So, yeah, and so they went and built these amazing creatures. And then we got Andrew Spooner on board, who is a guy who works with the Muppets. So he's done, I don't know if you guys see Furchester Hotel.
I'm trying to remember if I've seen that one or not, but
it's an offshoot from Sesame Street.
Uh-huh.
He does Elmo's Uncle. If you ever watch it, Elmo has an uncle. And that's done by Andrew Spooner, sort of voice and action. And he also did Muppets Treasure Island and Muppets Most Wanted. And so he's quite sort of respected puppeteer. And he just, you know, very much like yourselves, I guess, he found us online and got really excited about the idea of, you know, us doing like a Gremlins Critters type movie. And he contacted us and said, you know, let's talk. And yeah, and he's been over, he's played around with our puppets. And it's just fantastic seeing someone as talented as him just breathing life into these things. And,
oh.
You know, he even did funny voices for them as well, which is great.
I'm kind of curious about the puppets. Did you guys make them yourselves or just?
Well, we kind of designed them ourselves, and then we got these students at Wimbledon College of Arts to build them. I mean, the design basically was kind of very much a collaborative thing. We all went away and come up with our own ideas and what we wanted these things to look like, and then we came together with the students. This is me and Pete, and we said, look, here's some pictures, this is what we think it looks like. And you know, I had to think about things that happened in the script as well, and how these creatures react in those sort of situations. So we kind of had this idea, these like fluffy balls, very much like a Tribble or a Fizz Gig, if you're into Dark Crystal. Very much like that. And then the idea is when they get agitated, they unfurl into these standing up sort of creatures that are sort of slightly larger. And that's kind of... And so those are the sort of the main mechanisms we had in the script that we needed to then put into these puppets. And, we just went to these students and said, look, this is what we need. And off they went and built them.
Go ahead, Dana. Bane, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I just love the idea that you're doing practical effects and not going CGI.
Yeah.
I love movies that do practical effects because CGI is just so overplayed sometimes.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm very much... I love CGI as well. I love practical effects. But... I love whatever is the right thing to use at the time. I mean, you know, the CGI is a great tool if it's needed, but I think there are some films that just use it all over the place, and I think that's unnecessary.
Right.
But I'm a massive lover of practical anyway. I mean, The Thing was one of my favorite films, which is all practical. I mean, back in the 80s. And I saw the work that ADI did for the new prequel thing. And a lot of it was cut and just they ended up going CGI. And it was such a crime because you could tell the stuff they'd done was phenomenally good. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, for some reason, a producer got scared and decided to make it all CGI, which I thought was a big mistake. But I love practical stuff. I mean, you look at the Alien movies, not so much the sort of latter ones, because they do tend to, they do have an element of the man in the suit stuff, but they do have an element of CGI as well.
Yes.
But, you know, I love practical stuff. I mean, look at The Predator and things like that. And,
oh, yes.
And Pumpkinhead, you know, Stan Winston yes. and stuff. Yeah, I mean, there is talking about the blending of CGI and practical, I think Jurassic Park,
mm-hmm.
where they did, and I think successfully, to me, that was the last moment in cinema history, for me, I'm not talking about for everyone, that my jaw hit the floor. You know, I can't think of a film that's happened since then that absolutely, I just went, wow, I have never seen that before.
Yeah.
So, and you know, and that was the brilliant blending of the two, of practical and CGI. Definitely. But yeah, practical. We got a team, an effects company called Tankful Effects on board, who are doing all of these sort of gore effects. And the other thing is, when these little critters bite people in our film, the people that become infected sort of look like adult versions of the creatures to a certain extent. So there we've got them on board to design the makeup and the effects for the people. So they're all 100% practical, all that stuff.
Nice.
I don't think we're going to have any CGI. We might do a bit of blue screen because we're looking into ways of handling the puppets. We might have to do a man in a green suit.
Mm-hmm.
Moving it from behind, and then we'll have to try and get rid of him, you know. So there'll be an element of CGI there, just from helping us make it look better rather than taking over center stage, as it were.
Nice.
And I don't know how we do the playing. We're thinking about buying an Airfix kit and messing around with it in slow motion or something.
We were talking with Jeff Harmer here of Dead Air, and talk about your human cast. Obviously, there's one element of the human cast that we can't discuss at the moment, but the rest of the cast. Tell us about how they are and how you came in contact with them and stuff like that.
Okay. We always had Stacey Hart, who did a few feature films. She did The Beach, Danny Boyle's The Beach. She was in a film called Get Real, Things to Do Before You're 30. She's a very good friend of mine, and we almost wrote the film with her in mind as the drummer from day one. So we kind of persuaded her in advance to do the film. Because when you read the script, the character is Stacey. It's that you can't pull them apart. So Stacey, who's in my short film Selfie as well, mm-hmm. she's playing our drummer of the Monster Kitten band. The lead singer of the band is being played by a lady called Charlie Bond. She's done a lot of Brit flicks. She did a lot of the Rise and Fall of the Essex Boys and stuff like that. And we got hold of her through, in a roundabout sort of way, through Kate Marie Davis, who's another member of the cast. So I explain about Kate, that might actually make it easier to talk about Charlie. Kate... is a bit of a Twitter phenomenon. She's very prolific and she's, you know, quite popular in the Twitter sphere. I'm not really a Twitter fan personally because I'm just rubbish at it. All I do is retweet. That's Peter.
About what
Peter,
90% of Twitter is now, anyways.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Peter, the guy, the writer of Dead Air and co-producer, he loves Twitter, so he's kind of in charge of the Twitter account for Dead Air. So most of 99% of everything on Twitter from our Dead Air account is Pete. But he sent me a link to Kate's showreel, and we were really sort of, we really liked it, and we asked her to sort of audition for one of the roles, which she did, but we weren't able to do that in person. She did it over Skype and stuff, and so that's how we got Kate on board. Then Kate did this thing called Showreel Share Day. It's a Twitter hashtag. If you type in Twitter, you'll just see thousands of tweets about actors sharing their showreels. And that became a bit of a phenomenon. I think it's got its own website now and all that sort of stuff. And it was via that Showreel Share Day that we found Charlie, because she shared... We basically, loads of actors were sharing their showreels using that Twitter tag. And we went through a load of people just using that, doing a search on that. And then Charlie came up. And so that's how we got Charlie. We asked her to audition, and she obviously came through. And there's a lady called Joanna Stanton who's playing our lead guitarist in the band. And she auditioned for the role. We did a casting call on a website, Casting Call Pro, and we had about, I don't know, 110, 120 people apply. And then we had some auditions for that, and she got through. I mean, all these people were all applying for the lead singer, but what we weren't telling anyone was that we didn't know who we wanted as the lead singer and who wanted as the bassist or the lead guitarist. Once we got through all the auditions, we then sat down, me and Pete, and we worked out who would be best to play which character in the band. And there were some people that were absolutely fantastic as certain characters, but it, as a dynamic, as a group, we needed to think about everything. So, you know, some people sort of got through, some people didn't. It was quite a slog, really. But we think we made the right decision with those four as our band. And then we had the band's manager that's being played by a guy called Dan Palmer. Dan is an actor, writer. Maybe producer, I can't remember, but he was he did a horror film called Stalled, if you've heard of that, which yes. is a zombie
Christmas one.
Is it Christmas? Yeah, it says Christmas yes. party, isn't it? Yeah,
it was a Christmas office party. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah, well, he wrote that and he stars in it.
Yes,
he plays the guy in the cubicle. so that's Dan Palmer, and he's playing the band's manager in Dead Air, so he's really cool. He's done quite a few other sort of horror movies as well. He's a very talented guy. So we're really lucky to have him on board. He was in a film called My Bloody Banjo, which I don't know if you've seen. I think that's the title in America.
Yes, that's what it is.
And the star of My Bloody Banjo is James Hamer Morton, who is the co-pilot of our Dead Air plane. He was another guy that I'd always had in mind to play a role in the film, and I wasn't sure what at the time. I met James on the set of a film called The Fitzroy, which I believe it's had its American premiere a couple of months ago. But it's an awesome, weird sort of, I wouldn't say futuristic, but it's not. It's a very much a cyberpunk type movie. Very much like, have you ever seen City of Lost Children by Jean-Pierre Jeunet?
Yes.
Andrew, the guy who directed Fitzroy, it was he kind of had that as a bit of a palette in his head when he was sort of designing the film. Anyway, wow. James stars as one of the main characters in that film. And that's where he met, he met me on that as well. But he also met a guy called David Shaw, who is playing the pilot of our dead airplane. David Shaw has done sort of quite a bit of TV in the UK. He did a TV series called The Inbetweeners.
Which, oh, yes.
Yeah. Do you remember there's a character called Jay who's always bragging about.
Oh, all Jay. The women he's slept with.
Yeah. Well, not Jay. It's not Jay. It's his dad.
Oh, Jay's dad, right?
Jay's dad. He's the one that's always sort of putting his son down. Yeah. So
nice.
So I think that's his most popular sort of character, but he's done a lot of stuff. He was in the English versions of The Office. He was in the IT Crowd. He's done a lot of sort of serious drama, but I love him for his humor, his comedy. So he's in the Fitzroy as well. He plays one of the lead roles in the Fitzroy. And that's how him and James met, and also how I got connected to them as well. So that's our main cast, but we do have another person on board who is voicing or doing the noises of our creatures. And this is a Hollywood actor that we're not allowed to reveal because we're not allowed to use their name for the crowdfunding, which is totally understandable.
Yes.
So we can't say anything until we've got the money and we don't have to worry about funding any more money for it. But it's a real shame because I know it's one of those actors that I think if everyone knew who that this person was involved, that everyone would have a lot more people jumping in, which is probably the reason why they're not letting us use that person's name for raising the money. But, you know, that's fair enough. We'll do it without him. Him could be either. Sugar. I'll let that one slip. But it's so this person is doing the voices of our creatures, and it's going to be amazing. It really, really is. We're so close to getting it funded anyway. I mean, we're going to do it, but it depends on how much. I mean, we think we're going to be fine to shoot the film, as long as we hit our 10. If we can, then we've got our post-production budget, which is probably going to be about $6,000. So we're going to try and crowdfund that later on in the year.
Okay.
And that's where the budget for our Hollywood actor will come from. So we probably won't be able to say anything until the end of that crowdfunding campaign. We don't know yet. We might see if we... It all depends. If we smash our 10 by the end of Tuesday next week, that's when the campaign ends. If we smash it, then you know we might be able to raise all the money we need for the post as well. We just wanted to get the film made, so we've just gone. We're raising enough just to shoot the film, and then we'll worry about everything else later.
Now, you've been directing since you were, seven? Am I right? Shooting film and directing?
Yeah, so, I've been making sort of short films with my mates since I was a kid, yeah. I kind of thought I'd get into it for real when I left. It was a bit of a sad story. I went to college and did sort of TV and video production, and then I got very arrogant, and I turned around to everyone and said, yeah, I'm good enough. I can do this on my own. I not dropped out, I just didn't progress, I didn't go on to university or anything like that. And then it all happened at the wrong time. This was in the late 80s, early 90s, and the video industry was taking a massive nosedive at this point. So I kept going to all these people that were making sort of corporate videos and stuff like that, and they all kept turning around and saying, look, we're making people redundant, we're not hiring. And that was the story for hundreds of companies that I contacted. Mm. And, you know, so I never did it that way. I ended up, you know, working, getting a proper job or a normal job. And I got stuck, you know, got used to the money and the stability. And so then I made so that's kind of how I got stuck. And then I made a fan film, a Star Wars fan film back in, when was that? 2008, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And that was very much a bit just of a test, really, just to see if I could sort of make something that was fun and people enjoyed. And it did quite well. It got me notoriety a bit because I worked for a bank at the time. And so 2008 was not about the bank's year, really. So when the crash happened in the UK, the financial crash, which was in June 2008, it was literally when we were releasing our film. And the problem is the press got hold of it. They put, you know, these guys who work in a bank, they're making a movie, put it together, and then started talking about, oh, this is what the banks are doing instead of looking after all our money. Even though I had nothing to do with that. I was just working in the IT department. I sort of was sort of dragged through sort of the gutter press, as it were. There's all those articles are still online somewhere. And it didn't look too good. But it gave me a bit of a buzz, you know. I got really excited by it. And I thought, you know what, I can, you know, start looking at getting back into this. And then I've been slowly progressing ever since. I've shot a feature film back in 2013 called Addict, which was a horror film. And I did a lot of comedies because I love comedy. But it's a really hard thing to get right, which is probably why I like it more, because so many people have different things that make them laugh. You know, some people love the airplane movies, some people don't, and I don't understand why. Some people love either. You know, yeah. I mean, like stuff like, you know, the Adam Sandler movies, you know, some people must like them because he churns them out. You know, people are watching it, people are buying into it, and they're enjoying it. I'm not a particular fan of his later stuff, but his earlier stuff I really enjoyed. But, you know, so it's a real, you know, really hard thing to get right. And me and Pete wrote a film together sort of as a precursor to that air called Smile, which we literally just finished post-production on. And it's kind of a dark comedy. That's kind of how I shot it. I've shown it to a couple of people and they've really enjoyed it, but none of them seem to be laughing where I'm wanting them to laugh. So it's interesting. So I'm hoping that, you know, because I'm not going to tweak it now. I'm done with it. It's finished. I love it. And everyone that the couple of people that I've shown it to, just for, you know, feedback, they've really liked the film, but, you know, they weren't laughing where I need them to. So, you know, you can get comedy right, you can get it wrong. There's no way that's going to happen with Dead Air, though. I mean, it's just hilarious. It's, you know, some of it's quite subtle. Some of it's going to be very sort of in your face. It's just going to be a whole new ball game. But it's we definitely got the comedy right in this, I think. Nice blend.
Now I noticed that you had, what was it, 45 nominations and 8 awards for Selfie?
No,
48.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that film for a minute?
Of course. Selfie was a short film I shot in 2014. Just purely, I purely designed it to be a film that's going to make people jump and just creeped out. And it's about a girl who's sending selfie photos to her boyfriend. And each photo is getting progressively more suggestive. And then the boyfriend keeps texting back saying, you know, I thought you were alone, you know, who's that standing behind you? And that's kind of the whole premise of the film, is the fact that, you know, he keeps saying, you know, I think you're, you know, why you're lying to me, you know, you're not alone. And she said, oh yeah, of course I am. And then he says, oh, look at the photos. And then she looks at the picture and then she sees someone in the background. And then, and that's kind of how the story is. And it was just purely designed as a something to sort of freak people out and make them jump.
Yeah. And that made me jump a lot. It was good. It was good. So well scary. It was so scary. Oh. Aww.
Well, the annoying thing is we had, because we finished that, I think early 2015, we got it on the festival circuit, and it's done phenomenally good because it's quite short. It's only 6.5 minutes long. It's, you know, it's effective. It does what it says on the tin. You know, it's just scary. And the annoying thing is, back in, what was it, 2015 again, there was a, I got an email from one of the festivals that was showing Selfie, and they said, oh, have you seen this? And they sent me a link to a German film called Selfie from Hell. And it's a complete carbon copy of mine. Now, what? Well, I say complete carbon copy. I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I haven't.
No, it's only about 2 minutes long. So it's a lot shorter than what I did. But the idea is exactly the same. It's got the same beats in it. There's moments in it that are exactly the same as mine. And it's kind of freaky. And I contacted the guys who made Selfie from Hell, because everyone was... The problem is, Selfie from Hell went viral, which was my intention with Selfie. I was going to hit the festival circuit, then on Halloween, I was going to do a bit of a build-up and then release it for everyone to watch, and hopefully they'll be scared and then it'll go viral or something like that. And then literally 2 months, 2 months before I was about to do that, this film called Selfie from Hell hits the web, you know, hits all the right, viral sites like, you know, Lad Bible and stuff like that on Facebook. And then, you know, before I knew it, it would, you know, theirs was, you know, reaching millions of hits, and mine was like, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 on Vimeo. And it was kind of really annoying, because that was my intention, and theirs was very, very similar to mine. And when I asked them about it, they were like, oh, well, you know, yours is similar to ours, isn't it? And they're like, well, you know, mine was out first. But then again, you know, the idea is not original. I mean, I'm told that there are films. Someone said to me that Insidious, although I haven't seen it, it's kind of similar to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. So... You know, I just have to sort of bite my lip about it, because there's nothing I can do. I can't prove that they saw my film first and then copied it. But, you know, but it's so many similarities between the two. Unbelievable. But anyway, that's Selfie. It's done really well. We've won, 48 official selections. We've won 8 awards, I think. And it's been nominated for Best Film 6 times, I think. Wow. So, you know what? They can have all the millions of hits. Yeah, thank you.
As it should. It is very. Oh my god, the ending! I screamed.
Well, I love going to festivals where they screen it, and I try to do as many as I can. And I've been in a few where there've been screams, and I've had people screaming before the actual sort of bit that makes everyone scream. It's lovely, because there was one festival I was where we'd won an award for it, and they stuck me at the front, and I hate going at the front. I like to sit at the back, because then I can get to see that everyone jump. That was a bit frustrating, but it was won an award, so I wasn't going to moan too much. But I do like watching an audience. If my film's good, then I will watch an audience. If it's not, then I'll go out the door and wait. It did really well, and it's I think off the back of that, it is almost how I met Peter. Peter did a feature film called Scrawl, which stars Daisy Ridley. I think it was the first feature film she'd ever done at mm-hmm. that point. And I sort of met him. I'd seen it, met him off the back of that. And he lives literally just down the road from me. So it's kind of weird that we've been in the same social circles for years, but never actually spoken to each other. So, and we sort of connected, and he's seen Selfie, and you know, and off the back of that, between the two, we decided to work together. So, which is great. It's been working really well so far.
And we're down to 9 days left for this project, for the campaign. And we did give, oh my God, I wanted to jump on this because this is going to be very, very good. And plus, you know, if we could get EMZT on the side of the plane, that would be great too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you went for a funky sticker perk, didn't you? Yeah,
yes.
What we do is for that perk, you get, it goes on the side of the flight cases that the band have.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes.
So so the flight cases would be the big scene where the first person gets attacked by the creatures is going to be in the hold where we have all the band's kit. So there are other scenes with it with the flight case in, but it won't be so prominent as in this one scene. So it'll be there. And what we'll do is we also For anyone that goes for that perk, we're going to take a picture of the flight case so that they can see all the stickers, including theirs, and then we'll also send them a copy of their sticker.
Yes. So
they can stick it up if they want.
That's what I like the idea. And I also chose the soundtrack because the music that you were playing you were sampling on some of those videos were just, it was nice. It was nice and creepy and dark and just, it was like perfect for going to be perfect for the film.
Yeah. Well, that is actually music by Dan Hall that we use in the videos. That was one of his early demos for us for Dead Air. He said, what do you think of this?
Yes.
And we love it. And it's very, what I've always said about it is it reminds me of, I mean, one of my favorite horrors from back in the day when I worked in a cinema years ago, was Return of the Living Dead Part 2.
Yes.
Absolutely love it. I wish it would come out on Blu-ray. The soundtrack to that is pretty awesome, and I love the music. Mm-hmm. And the particular bit where like the zombies are rising. And I just thought that Dan, maybe unintentionally, really hit that Return of the Living Dead Part 2 head for me. And because the thing with Dead Air, it's very much rooted in sort of the horrors of the 80s and very early 90s. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at stuff like From Beyond, Reanimator, obviously Brain Dead, mm-hmm. Critters and Gremlins, Demon Knight, you know, Vamp. From an aesthetic point of view, Vamp is kind of is there for sure.
Oh, yes.
It's that sort of film, you know, where horror was fun. It wasn't always, you know, it wasn't all about, it wasn't always serious. I mean, I loved horror back in the 80s. Nowadays, I think it takes itself a bit too seriously.
Yes.
Which is okay, you know, if I'm in the mood for it. But I like my horror nowadays to be scary, but I love a good bit of a laugh with it as well.
Oh, absolutely.
To be totally entertained.
Yeah, campy horror is absolutely, I still think it's great because, you know, you got to have a little bit of that element just to take the edge off a bit. You're right. I mean, we've talked about this in another segment. Halloween is getting another reboot, and I'm just sitting there going, how many more times can we watch this? I mean, how many more different ways can we watch it? So
yeah, I mean, you know, you can't beat Carpenter's original, so what's the point? Exactly. It's like, you know, although I didn't mind the prequel to The Thing too much, I was kind of, I liked the idea of seeing it, but I mean, it was all right. It wasn't great. It wasn't rubbish. It was just kind of in the middle. It was all right. But, you know, I think that there aren't many Carpenter films that I would say, yes, I would love to see a sequel. I'd love to see a remake, because he makes those films that have those endings that are so open-ended. I want it to stay that way, you know?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
The Thing, you know, the end of the two guys drinking in the cold, passing the bottle, hope no one who hasn't seen the film is listening to this. and you think about, I mean, what, I think my favorite ending to a Carpenter movie has to be Prince of Darkness.
Yes.
Absolutely. I love the tone of that film, and it just gets me on edge all the way through it. And that final shot at the end, I love it. And that's to me, whenever I make a movie, I'm always thinking, what would John Carpenter do?
Mm-hmm.
As in, I kind of start from a really cool ending, and then I work backwards from that. I mean, you look at I did a comedy called Room 4, and again, it was all about the ending, and then when I wrote it, it was about the journey to the ending. Selfie, again, was just about the ending, and then I worked out how to get to the ending. You know, that's just how I work. And I did a comedy called Karen's Room. That was probably the only film that I didn't write it. A really talented guy called Neil James wrote that. That does have an interesting ending, but it wasn't the original ending. But that did really well for me as well. If you haven't seen Karen's Room, I recommend that one. It's a romantic comedy with a twist. So, I like twists. So,
yes.
I'm not saying I'm going to be M. Night Shyamalan, but that sort of stuff. Like I said, I like to find my ending. What's going to make people go, wow, that was awesome? They'll forgive me the rest. But it's like, if you've seen The Mist,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the ending of The Mist is probably one of the best endings in a movie I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
I hate it. Absolutely hate it and love it.
Yeah.
And freaks me right out. As a parent, I think that's the worst thing about it. Is,
yeah.
Yeah. So the rest of the film, I think it's not that great. It's all right, but it's a bit long.
It dragged. It dragged.
It does. Yeah. And, you know, some of the effects were pretty naff. But it was just, you know, it was all right. And there were some sort of dynamics and in the between some of the characters I just didn't like. But the ending was so powerful. I forgave all of the bad things that I'd seen previous.
Mm.
And that's why I think every filmmaker or every film has to have an ending that was worth the effort.
Yeah.
Of going through it, and that to me that is my sort of my ethos when I'm making a film.
I agree.
Yeah. So whenever I make, what would Carpenter do?
All right, Bane, you got anything else, or?
Did we talk about the band? I mean, I noticed. Yeah. I noticed one of the promo videos, the girls, they were all like chatting with each other, and they have a really good chemistry.
Yeah, well, the thing is that when we none of them have actually met. I don't know. I think Charlie and Kate may have met. I'm not sure, but none of them have actually met yet. That was all done sort of via Skype and stuff.
Yeah. But
what we want to do is we want to make sure that when we get them together, the certain elements of the script where certain characters like certain characters or don't like certain characters, this, and we want to make sure that we keep that by putting them together not too soon, not too soon to the shoot date. Because some of it needs to be quite fresh.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of holding off getting them all in the same room, particularly at Stacey's character, the drummer, because mm-hmm. she hates everyone. So yeah. She's kind of a grumpy character.
She's the group bitch, right?
yeah. Well, I don't know. I'd say that the singer is the group bitch, really.
Oh.
But I don't mean that in a nice way. Charlie's listening, but she's kind of out for herself.
Ah,
that's the singer. She's kind of her role in the film is she's only with this band, Monster Kitten, purely because she wants to use them as a leg up into the industry, get a name for herself, and then she wants to go solo as soon as she can. That's that's her momentum. That's what she wants to do. So so that's her.
Nice.
I'm trying to think of the word now. I've got, what the actors always say, what's my... Oh, this is what happens. Not thinking right. Anyway, don't worry. It's going to kill me when I listen to this back. I know the word that I'm after. But then you've got, and there's certain other elements. And Joanna, who's playing the drummer, she's very much not away with the fairies, but she's kind of a bit high on the fact that she's in a rock band or a punk rock band, whatever you want to. Mm-hmm. She's really sort of can't believe she's there. She's almost uncontainable. So she's just going to be too, you know, overexcitable, which would be great. And the other thing we haven't mentioned is the music of the band.
Yes.
The actual music, although unfortunately none of our actors will be playing any instruments.
Right.
The music itself is coming from a lady called Erica Knuckles, who there's a British band called The Wonder Stuff. He's their fiddle player, and
right.
You've heard the song "I Would Walk 500 Miles," etc.
Yes.
Well, the people who sang that, the Proclaimers, she plays with them as well. But she's also got her own. She sings with her husband Miles. I think it's just called Miles and Erica. They've released albums, and she's got her own band, just called Erica Knuckles, where she's on a second album. I mean, I think she's finishing off an album called Miles and Erica, and then she'd be working on a third album for Erica Knuckles, which is just shortened to EN. It's a real, really interesting sound, and I absolutely adore it. Is it when I actually met her and I said you're almost a bit like a female Trent Reznor. It mixes so many different styles and sounds amazing, and she's got so much attitude as well. When you sort of see her on stage, and the way she looks is really interesting and unique, and her sound is unique, and everything about her and the music, it's all great. And to have her on board sort of with being the music of our band is just phenomenal. So we're really chuffed to have Erica there.
Wow.
So yeah, we've got an amazing team coming together. What with the DP on this one, the guy doing the camera work, is the same guy who did Selfie for me. So it's a good crew. We've got the same. There's no point going into this. Everyone else, I'll be here for all day, to be honest. but yeah, we've got a really, really cool team being put together. So this is going to be absolutely brilliant. When you get the money.
I'm looking forward to this. I am so excited for this project to be done. It has to be done. So we're going to shout it everywhere.
Thank you. Yes. And that's the thing, is we're getting so much good feedback. I mean, I even had even Zach Galligan from Gremlins follows us on Twitter.
Oh, yes.
So yes. I need to get him to shout us out. That's what I've got to do.
Yes.
So we got Zach. And I don't know, this is, I put this on Facebook the other day. It's kind of cool. That if you ever watch Bob the Builder or or anything like that, or Shaun the Sheep, the lady does the sort of the female voices in those shows. She's backing us, so that's cool. Having someone that although people probably won't recognize her name, but they'll recognize the fact that she does the voice of Wendy, or they'll write a record, oh, that's Wendy from Bodybuilder.
Yes.
but yeah, she's backing us, so we're chuffed about that.
Yeah.
And just to have people, you know, like all the actors that we've got on board, we're just chuffed to bits. Absolutely chuffed to bits.
And we're down to 9 days left, and we're gonna keep retweeting, we'll keep promoting. This film has to be done. It just has to be.
Oh, it will be. It will be. Yes. We will make it. It just, you know, not having all the money we need at the right time just might make it last a little longer, the pain, but the more money we get up front at the start, the quicker the process goes. So yes. we're gonna make it. It's not gonna happen, but we nice. Just wanna make sure that people, the more money we get, the quicker we can do it, and the bigger we can make it, really. You know, there are certain elements where we've had to go back to the script and just tweak it so that we could lower, because we this is our second run at doing a crowdfunder. We originally did it via a Kickstarter, but we asked for too much. We wanted 20,000, which even then, with the current script, was still short of what we needed. Wow. But still a lot of money. And we got nearly 16. So we were really chuffed. We were really proud that we got nearly 16, because, you know, this is the first time that me and Pete have ever really asked anyone to help, you know, finance one of our films. Because everything else we've done so far has been self-funded. Mm-hmm. We've never gone to anyone, no company or anything, saying, look, can you help us fund this? Never asked for a grant, none of that. So, you know, we tried it the first time, failed to retweaked everything, re-looked at the budget really hard and cut stuff out. So we've got it down to 10, and that's just for the pre and production budget. So the post would be about 6. So that's kind of where we're at. And so if we can get the 10, or if we can get the 16, that would be fantastic, because then we wouldn't have to do a second one, and then we could work on making the film bigger and better. But it's going to be to the wire, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, I guess one thing left to ask is just tell everybody where they can find you and support you and all that other good fun stuff.
Cool. Yeah. The easiest way is deadairmovie.com. So we've got a website. But if you want to go deeper, if you look on Facebook, type everything is at Dead Air Movie. So we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram. If you just type at Dead Air Movie, all is one word, and you'll find us, whether it be Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. But yeah, we have the website, deadairmovie.com. And everything's there, really. So one way or another, you can find us, not a problem. Or if you go on Indiegogo, if you want to back us, just type Dead Air Movie and you'll find, you know, we're there. Can't miss us.
Yes.
Outstanding. Well, Jeff Harmer, we appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me on, and thanks for backing us. It really means a lot.
No, and thank you for this.
I can't wait to send you the bits that you perked.
Thank you. This is going to be brilliant.
Thank you.
Yes.
Look at me, Damien. It's all for you.
Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
Red Rum.